WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, AJ Myers. We got the three of us back. Griff had a bye week last week. He's back. Griffin Bloomstein's here, and Josh Rothard's here as well. Griff, let's start with you. You know, you had your bye week. Was it a good bye week? I'm sure it was a busy bye week, but you had your bye week.
Had the bye week. It was a busy bye week. I think we were productive, probably. We thought coming out of the bye week, we would be able to attack a little more. We thought we'd be a little more rested to attack out of the bye week, but not necessarily the case. You know, we're right back at it, right back into the flow of things. You know, usually a bye week's a week to reset, but that wasn't really the case. And I think you could have used that reset week. We'll get that next week with Thanksgiving. I've been good. It's been busy, but, you know, having fun. Syracuse sports have been keeping us really busy, so it's all
fun. They certainly have, with Thanksgiving coming up. Josh, you have any Thanksgiving plans or you know, let's roll with this. Favorite Thanksgiving food? Because we've always talked about this. So what's your ideal Thanksgiving food?
I'm going to be really boring here, but, like, dude, I love turkey.
Oh, come on.
We get a big old turkey normally.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's so good. I eat like 2 pounds of that. Watch the Lions game. It's great. I mean, I want to go in person this year. I don't know if that's going to be possible.
Who are they playing?
They're playing the Packers, I believe. Probably should know this since the game is literally this week. But
they had a great game Sunday night. I know that.
Yes, they had a fantastic game. So good that they didn't even score double digit points.
Oh. That was a fun one. That was an interesting one. I'm not too happy about it either, as an Eagles.
Yeah, I know. I honestly don't think either side should be too happy coming out of the game. I thought Philadelphia didn't play all that well either. I think the NFC is just a crapshoot this year, to be honest. The AFC looks really good compared to the NFC.
It's interesting for sure, and I think of the three of us, the happiest of NFL is Griffin. I mean, go Pats, go right now.
Whoa. Go Pats, go. It's like that's not a Jets saying. Like, go
yeah,
Jets. Like, we're just Pats. I'm feeling great. Pats rolling 8 wins in a row, 9-2. Drake May MVP watch. He's the next GOAT. Like, Tom Brady, who? No, I'm just kidding. But in all seriousness, Drake May looks electric. I am also a big turkey guy. I want to get back to the Thanksgiving. Cool. I'm a big turkey guy, big gravy guy. Just like pour gravy on anything, you know. Like, it's good stuff. Pumpkin cheesecake.
That's where
I'll live things.
That sounds good. I'm always mac and cheese. That is my go-to. I love some mac and cheese. It's not always in the rotation, which makes me kind of angry. Maybe I should start cooking it. That's a whole other conversation. Syracuse men's basketball, they had a busy week as well. First, they were in Philly on Saturday, and they handled Drexel. My plan was like, oh, let's get into this Drexel game as well, because I thought there was a lot of interesting aspects. Unfortunately, Syracuse did. I'm going to put it like that. Against Monmouth, they made this game way, way, way too interesting. They snuck away. This was Tuesday night. We're recording this Wednesday night. It was late Tuesday night. I'm going to get into that as well. They snuck away with a 78-73 win over the Hawks. The first thing I want to get at is this later start. I know Adrian Autry isn't going to come out and just say, like, oh, the later start affected us. But it definitely affected the atmosphere. There was no atmosphere. because no one on a Tuesday night is going to go see Syracuse and Monmouth. That starts at 9, and then you're not getting home until midnight on a Tuesday night. Saturday night, sure, maybe a little bit more of a crowd. If it's Duke Tuesday night at 9, sure. Monmouth at 9, absolutely not. So that was my first grudge, and it had nothing to do with the game. The second one has nothing to do with the game either. The officiating was awful.
Yeah.
The officials were calling every little thing. They were dishing out technicals. That definitely affected Syracuse in that first half. They could develop no rhythm because it was just constant foul call after foul call after foul call. Then there were the things that Syracuse did do poorly, and it was kind of a, it was like reliving a nightmare of last year, especially in that second half. It was like, oh my goodness. You thought the Orange would put it away, and they wouldn't. And it started with the free throw line. They went, what'd they go from? They went 19 of 33 from the free throw line. That is unacceptable. They left way too many points on the board. Even if you get half of those points back, then it's a double-digit game. And then the next would be turnovers. 12 turnovers led to 18 Hawks points. Sloppy with the ball. JJ Starling was awful. I know he just came back for his first real game, but he was really bad. He was really bad from the free throw line. He had two air balls. Griff, there's my rage on the game. I was really disappointed with how Syracuse played because it was all going up. The trajectory looked great 3 games in. They had a great second half in Philly, and then it was just an awful showing Tuesday night.
Rightfully so. Like, you should be upset. Syracuse fans should be upset. Syracuse played like last year's team. And I think I'll start on the JJ front. It looks like he's scared to attack the rim, which was one of his better attributes last season, because he knows he can't make free throws. So he's scared to attack the rim and go up for a layup because if he gets fouled, he knows he's not making both free throws. So that just stinks because I mean, there's some mental block, it seems like, with JJ at the free throw line right now. Because, I mean, God, that form is awful. Like, it is just like there's a hitch, there's an air ball or three or four. It does not look pretty. The 9 p.m. starts. Wow. Yeah. Can't believe there's going to be more of those because that it will not be fun. I think. That was Syracuse's option, 9 o'clock on linear TV or 7 o'clock on ACC Network Extra. And I guess one will have better turnout fan wise, one will have better viewership. And I don't know. I mean, AJ, you were at the dome?
I was not. I was just from the game or from watching it on TV, and I was, scrolling X, and all the comments were everyone. It wasn't much of a crowd, and people weren't really into it, because it's hard to get into a game when it's tips off this late and it's Monmouth Syracuse. It's going to be so hard to generate an atmosphere.
There's no reason for people to go. And especially if Syracuse is gonna play poorly. And I guess that's just kind of what disappointed me.
I thought Mike Waters summed it up the best. He had a tweet yesterday. He said, "The fan base looks, it looks like a patient in the doctor's office just
Yes,
sitting
I saw that as well.
arm crossed." I mean, that is what it was. I mean, they weren't, I mean, it could have been, a close game, and it was a close game, and they weren't even into it. They could be blowing them out. They wouldn't have been into it anyways because it'd be such a boring game. Yeah, I think when you look at JJ Starling, I don't know if they rushed him back here, but there's definitely something wrong with him. I think he's either still got that lingering wrist injury that he missed some time with last year, or whatever is going on with the lower body injury. I just don't think he's 100%. And if he's not 100%, why do you play him in a game like this? I mean, Adrian Autry changes up the lineup here and puts Kyan back on the bench. I don't know why. Like, I don't know what needed to change. I mean, JJ could have very easily been eased back into his role, and it wouldn't have changed much. So I don't really understand changing the momentum right there. And then, like you said, the officiating, there were a lot of things thrown at Syracuse that really threw their momentum off in this game. I think the stoppages from the officiating was a big part. I think the fact that they couldn't settle into, a rhythm because of the technicals and everything. There was a lot of stuff going on in this game, and I think that, like, if we're gonna get used to that, if the officiating is gonna be a constant, which I hope it's not, because no one should have to sit through that officiating ever again. This is a momentum-based team. I mean, they're gonna be, a team that thrives off the runs and the kills. Autry has said it already a lot in the early going. The mentality is a huge reason why this team was very successful at the start of the year. And when that started to dwindle out, I think that's where you kind of saw this team start to struggle.
Certainly. And I understand, you know, bringing JJ back because I don't think you wanted to ease him in against a team like Houston. But I do think there will be a conversation if these poor performances continue. And I know it was really just one poor performance. He's really only played one game, and it was Tuesday night. You know, I think there's a question of, you know, is his spot as locked in the starting lineup, or is it? Or isn't it? You know, I know he's the senior, the veteran leader, this and that, but ultimately, if he's not performing, there is going to be questions asked of whether he should come off the bench. Now, I don't hate the idea of Kyan Anthony being the sixth man off the bench. No. I mean, he struggled against Monmouth, but, like, let's be real. He wasn't going to have 18, 20 points every game. He was kind of due for a poor game. And even then, I mean, yeah, he shot really poorly, actually. I was looking for a bright spot, but he really didn't have that good a game. And, you know, that's going to happen. He's a freshman. You can't expect him to light it up every game. And I really did want to talk about that Drexel game because he was brilliant in Philadelphia, especially in that first half when no one else really was. He was the one spark of offense, and he continued it in the second half as well. And look, he had a down game against Monmouth. I don't think much of that had to do with him coming off the bench as much as it was just the whole team playing poorly. And another player that, Griff, I really want to put under the light because – he can be so good at times, but he can also be, like, so, so incredibly frustrating in my eyes, is Donnie Freeman. 3 of 10? Like, there are times where it's just it looks like it should be so easy for him to get to the basket and score, and he overcomplicates it. It's either he's too many dribbles, he gets clogged in the paint for no reason, and really, he shouldn't be taking threes. You know, that's not his game. Thank goodness he can hit three throws, because that's how he got 12 of his 18 points. You know, if he didn't have that free throw shooting ability in his game, I mean, he wouldn't do much for this team right now. He's got to play better. There's no way around it.
Syracuse would have lost if he didn't make those free throws. Yeah. And like that's a big thing. I think Donnie's just settling a little too much. He's trying to be a little too cute with the ball. I'm not too worried. Like, you, I think the big thing of his game is running in transition, and Syracuse just wasn't able to do that because of the way the officials were calling the game and just how the thing went. Only 14 fast break points for Syracuse, 5 in the second half. So, like, I think that's a thing. On the Kyan JJ front, Kyan hasn't earned the right to start. JJ has earned the right to start. JJ averaged 18 points per game last season as your top dog. And now, yes, I guess he is coming off a little bit of an injury. But that doesn't mean he's not your guy. Like, JJ's still your guy. JJ was supposed to be the best player on this team this year, I guess, next to him and Donnie. And I think he still can be that. He can still be a 15 to 17 point per game scorer. I think he just needs to figure out some of those shooting things that obviously he's going through right now. I think on Kyan's front, I think he just missed his first couple shots and then got rattled and lost confidence, and his attitude on the bench probably wasn't that great. And then when he came back in, he hit a three in the second half, and it was like, okay, but like that's really all that happened. I think also his defense probably isn't as up to par with some of these other guys like George and Kings and I guess even Starling at some points. So maybe that's why he didn't see the floor as much. But he's still going to get his minutes. He's still the sixth man. He's still going to score his points. I think for Kyan, it's just about keeping the mentality and not getting too down on yourself after missing a shot or two. I want to give Nate King some credit, and I won't spoil my interview with Eric Devendorf too much, but you know, I brought up Nate Kings and how he had struggled to start the season. And we recorded that interview before Monmouth Tuesday. And Nate Kings did not disappoint. He showed that what he can do from the three-point line and, like, the shooter that he is. And I think that was really good to see because you hadn't seen that against your first three opponents. Comes out of the game 3 for 7, 15 points, still kept up the defensive intensity. And I think he's something. And then also, we haven't even touched on Nate George. I mean, the two of them played really, really well.
Yeah, I guess when you look at JJ here, I do agree. I think he has earned the right to start. But I don't think that means that, you know, he should be rushed into the starting lineup necessarily. If he's 100%, absolutely. I don't think there's a question in my mind. I think JJ should start over Kyan. But as of right now, I just think there's something wrong with him. And, you know, that's really all I have to add here. I do like Nate Kings. I thought he played outstanding last night. Georgia's probably the best point guard in the ACC. I'll stand by that. Just the way he spaces the floor, his court vision. I mean, he had, you know, some great lobs to William Kyle again last night. But honestly, William Kyle was averaging 6.5 field goals attempted in the first three games. And last night, he only had three shot attempts. I mean, he drained all three. He had 7 points. He didn't really leave his, you know, semicircle under the basket like he normally does, as he'll probably lead the team in field goal percentage without a doubt this year. But is that a concern? You know, I thought William Kyle, you know, he's this vertical threat on the offense. There's no easier place to score points in basketball than right under the hoop. And in a game where you were struggling to score points, is there a way they could have force-fed the ball more to William Kyle to get more high percentage looks? I think that's something they should look at and be like, maybe we could have fed him the ball more in this game and we could have had a more sizable lead.
I think
Certainly.
that
Go ahead, Ben.
before you go, AJ, I just want to like, but I think part of that is just Syracuse was not able to work in transition, and part of those is just like a quick lob to William Kyle. And I mean, Syracuse had a couple of those, but you got to get the ball to him more than three times. Like you have to have him get more than three shots because those are such high efficient looks.
Certainly, and he had three blocks as well. I mean, there's no denying William Kyle, Nathan George, and Nate Kings. Those three additions are one of the reasons why this team, I was going to say will be better, but should be better than they were last year, because those three have looked really good so far. I know Kyle didn't have a great game last or Tuesday night with only 7 points, but you can see the impact he makes. I mean, Nathan George, it's just like light and day to what Syracuse had last year at that point guard position. And thank goodness that the team was able to bring him in, because he's made things a lot easier. I think he's going to take a lot of pressure off JJ Starling as well as the season grows. And Nate Kings, I mean, he didn't start the season great. I don't think he was excellent Tuesday night, but you can see how natural of a shooter he is and how just reliable, hopefully, he will be a shooter for the Orange. And a player I do want to see more of, maybe right off the bench, is Sadiq White. I know he fouled out. I don't think that's his fault at all. He had that w bizarre technical called on him. That I guess also, you know, was a foul too. And then he got another really ticky-tacky foul, the one he fouled out in. So it wasn't his fault, but I mean, you could watch him play all day. I mean, athleticism out the wazoo, and he can jump for days as well. He was 4 or 5 from the field, 8 points. I think him and William Kyle, if you get them the ball down low early, there's not going to be a whole lot of guys that can stop him. So he'll be a great threat for the Orange off the bench. And that does bridge me nicely into my next point with the bench. In Philly, we learned of something called the juicing station. It's led by none other than Noah Lobdell. And if you don't know who Noah Lobdell is, it's understandable. He doesn't play. He's basically a walk-on, but he's technically, you know, there aren't any walk-ons aren't a thing anymore. But he is anchoring this juicing station. He's in charge of making sure the bench has the energy, is involved in the game, is jumping up and down, basically. I gotta say, I didn't see much of it in the second half. And every game I go to for and I cover for Syracuse men's basketball, I want to ask Adrian Autry your thoughts on the juicing station tonight. Just to do that, but of course I wouldn't burn my one, maybe two questions on that. But guys, I don't know if you saw this. There are now juicing station t-shirts. Everyone listening needs to
With
go
the number
find
24 on it for
yes,
Lobdell.
juicing station t-shirts. I just sent a link for you all guys to look at if you haven't seen them yet. I don't know what they Noah Lobdell is going for here. It looks like a popsicle stick with the number 24 on it. Griff, have you been able to see it?
I think it might be his hair.
It is. I think that's what it is. But
Good point, bro.
I thought
Yeah.
they could have done a little bit better of a job, maybe.
Maybe the design team over at Noah Lobdell Inc. is lacking a little bit. Yeah, I think the juicing station was a little underwhelming against Mammoth, and the energy wasn't there. I know it's a 9 o'clock tip, but the Syracuse is going to create some energy. It has to become from its bench, which was so successful in those three games. In the first three games, the energy was not high. The vibes weren't high on Tuesday. And it really showed. Syracuse struggled to start just like it did against Drexel. And then from there, Syracuse, you thought they were going to pull away, and they really just never did. It was disappointing.
It certainly was, and that was, a concerning sign, given that the next game is in Las Vegas against Houston. Syracuse, after that, then has it's back to back. They play Tuesday against number 24 Kansas. It's number 2 Houston on Monday, and then there is a third game, which will be against a very good team as well. And I mean, this is kind of a make or break. When we talked to Mike Waters, he laid it out really nicely for us. He said, this could really determine postseason success because if you get wins here, they're quad. Excuse me, they're quad one victories. And that's really all that matters for getting in the tournament. Griff, expectations based off of Tuesday night. And I guess if you want to base it off this early season, what realistically should fans be hoping for in Las Vegas?
I was pretty hopeful if the game against Monmouth went the way I thought it was going to be, which was going to be like a 20 to 25 point win, the Syracuse would be able to steal a game out in Vegas. And now I'm really just not sure at all. I think it'll be interesting to see what Syracuse can do. Obviously Houston won't be the easiest matchup. Number two team in the country. They are pretty good. And then I was thinking, oh, Syracuse can go beat Kansas. They might not have Darren Peterson. And then Kansas just kept it really, really close with Duke on Tuesday. And that is a little concerning without Darren Peterson. So if Kansas is keeping up with Duke, and Duke is really good with their freshman sensation, Cam Boozer, then Syracuse might not have a chance. Now, I think the way Syracuse plays, if they show up, if they play like they did against Monmouth, it'll be 30-point losses, and you can call it a day. If Syracuse plays like it did against Drexel in the second half and then against Delaware State, then I think Syracuse has a chance. I mean, I think they have a chance. The third game will be interesting. They could play some really good teams. They could also play like a Notre Dame or Maryland, some of those middle of pack Power Five teams. So it'll be interesting. I'll be on the dot on the double overtime on Monday for that one. So I will expect a lot of callers either way, but if Syracuse loses by 30, or I guess what is the other option? Loses by like 5? Do you think they can win? I don't know. I don't think so.
No, dude, come on. I think they're gonna get blown out of the gym against Houston. I will say this: I think they should throw everything they have at Kansas. I really think they have a chance in this game, and it's solely because Darren Peterson is hurt. Because Darren Peterson is the best freshman in the nation, possibly the best player in the nation, just his pure skill set. So I think if Darren Peterson doesn't play and it gives them a chance, they should do that. Now, another thing I will say is Tennessee is in the field in this tournament. So a very interesting scenario could play out here. Obviously, there's, a bunch of mathematical stuff that would have to happen, but you could see Syracuse play Tennessee in Vegas, and then they could have a week off, and then they could play Tennessee again in the dome. So we could see back-to-back games against the Volunteers. So I'll definitely be looking for that. In terms of expectations, they're on the floor here. I would like to see them compete. But I don't think that's going to happen. Houston has arguably the best defense in the nation every single year. And while it has seemed like the offense is much improved from last year, they didn't play Houston last year. So I think this will be a really big test to see where we're at. And if they can, keep Houston to 60 le or less points, maybe this is close. I mean, Houston's not a great 3-point shooting team. They're about 28% on the year. So if Houston tries to shoot the lights out and they get ice cold, maybe Syracuse can put up a fight here, but I wouldn't expect it.
So you mentioned how the craziness. So there's 18 teams that are going to Vegas, which is pretty crazy. So there's two different arenas that they're playing in, and it's a little complicated, so bear with me.
Both
So,
casinos, right? They're playing in casinos for both.
well, yeah, one's at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, and then the other's at the Michelob Ultra Arena, which I also think is in the MGM Grand. I could be
I bet
wrong,
that
but
is Vegas, right?
they're very close to each other. All right, so the 10 teams that Syracuse could hypothetically play for on it's most likely going to be Wednesday. There's a Thursday possibility, but not likely. Rutgers, Tennessee, Notre Dame, Kansas, Houston, Gonzaga, Alabama, UNLV, Maryland. Those are the 10 teams that are in contention for that third game. Obviously, Syracuse is not one of them. So 9 teams. I mean, realistically, I don't know if it's possible, But they hypothetically could end up playing Kansas or Houston again.
Could they? Like, it
I
would
mean,
have to be some
so what
bizarre
happens
scenario.
is then the 9th and 10th teams play on Thursday. So if Syracuse gets whooped in both games, they'll play Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's actually not good. That's in the middle of the
That's
line.
yeah, that's Thanksgiving. But
Yeah.
that's the, so if Syracuse doesn't get whooped, the seventh and eighth place teams in the, out of those 10 play Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. The fifth and sixth teams also play Wednesday. The third place game plays Wednesday, the championship game, and then the third and fourth. So it'll be interesting, I think. Yes, it's all scoring margin, wins, losses, whatever. So I think that'll be something that we'll just have to stay locked in on the good old Twitterverse and
But
figure
like
out where
even the
Syracuse
teams you
is.
just rattled off right there, I mean, is Syracuse competitive? I mean, they're probably competitive, but are they beating any of those teams? Like
I
after
mean,
barely beating
Rutgers
Monmouth.
is not great.
I mean, UNLV is probably just the host, I would imagine. They're probably not very good.
Notre Dame and
Oh, Notre Dame. Yeah, they beat Notre Dame once.
Maryland, how good is I mean the Maryland was last year was good and
Maryland
beat Syracuse.
last year,
Last
Syracuse
year
won.
he felt
So
well,
that's
but
true.
last year's team was
Awful.
awful.
Yeah, it was
But
awful.
like, are you Alabama,
No,
Gonzaga,
no. Yeah.
Kansas? I mean, yeah,
What
it's.
happened to the good old bracket? You know, why can't we just have a bracket and losers bracket? Like, what happened to that? They just
Instead,
want
we have the juicing station. That is what we have.
to
When in doubt, we have the juicing station.
overcome.
Maybe we need our own juicing station here. Come on. Just a little energy at times. I'll stick on that expectation train. I think if they get one win in Las Vegas, that's all I'm asking for. You know, maybe it's that third game, maybe it's Kansas. Just get one. And I think they could do it. You know, I think they have the talent to do it. There's no denying that. I just don't know if they have the chemistry yet to do it. Nor do they, I mean, the big thing is, nor do they have the consistency. Other
Yeah.
than Kai and Anthony through three games, he looked really consistent. And I would say Nathan George, you know, he's probably been the most consistent player out of everyone. Outside of that, there's just not enough flow yet for this team. And you hope you gain that in ACC play. But as we've emphasized, these are three massive games for Syracuse that really could decide the season. We may be in early March and looking back and saying, oof. You know, if they didn't go 0-3 in Vegas, maybe they would be a bubble teamer or something like that. So again, hopefully they get one. I also hope it's not like Maui, when they absolutely just got walloped by Tennessee and Gonzaga. They lost to Tennessee 73-56, and then this was 2 seasons ago, and then lost to Gonzaga 76-57. So hopefully games are a little closer than that, because that Maui Invitational was not fun. The only fun thing was after that they got Chaminade. In the third game, and they beat Chaminade 105-56.
I think it's pretty fitting that they played in the tournament they did last year. The field that they had last year, imagine if they were, if last year's team was in this year's field. I mean, they would lose every game by 40 points.
Oh, that would have been a disaster. I mean, that last year's team got lucky that they just went to Brooklyn to
Yeah,
play
they almost won a game there.
Texas Tech. Yeah, and they almost stole one. That did not go well at all. So that's the recap on the men's team. We got the juicing station. We got the disappointment that was that Monmouth game. And now a big question, big game on the horizon, big tournament on the horizon in Vegas to see what this team can do. First is Houston Monday. Let me get the time for that real fast. Monday,
I think it's 6 p.m. 6 p.m.
noon.
Eastern.
Nowhere near the schedule.
6 p.m.
PM. Hopefully it's 6 p.m. There's not delays or anything like that, but you never know with tournament style basketball like this. To the women's side, they have been pretty consistent with their victories. They had a weird one against Canisius, but they really handled Wagner, and now they have their own tournament at a casino. Both teams, men's and women's, are going to casinos.
Mohegan.
Women's team, as Josh just said, is going to Connecticut. They play Utah and then Michigan. Not ranked teams, but still good quality teams. The expectation here, Griffin, is maybe you get one against Utah. Ooh, maybe, yeah, Josh is just wrong.
Utah, Michigan's ranked 16th in the country,
Oh,
so
my
I
bad.
think.
Griff, I don't care, dude. Give me the orange.
Are you sure?
Yeah, dude, I'm sure. Layla Feely is gonna be fired up. This
That
is
is true.
a revenge game for Felia. She's gonna throw everything she has at him. I think Syracuse comes out of the 6-0. Or I mean, do they have to play a third game? If they got to play a third
No,
game,
no third
seven.
game.
Yeah, dude, this defense, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. Felicia Legette Jack has me fired up. Okay.
I'm not on the similar wavelength, Josh. I think this team is not gonna drink any Kool-Aid. I mean, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. They hopefully aren't drinking Kool-Aid and drinking water so they have a chance to win one of these games. But I mean, honestly, Utah's winnable. Michigan, on the other hand, like the sixth best team in the country going up against little old Syracuse.
Come on,
Although
Kristen. This isn't little old Syracuse.
I think it is. I just don't think that this team has. Yes, Leila Filia has the it factor, and Dominique Darius has looked good, and Uche Azoje also has looked good. I just don't think they can compete. The only way that Syracuse wins both games, and this could be a little call your shot moment, is if Michigan gets humiliated by UConn on Friday and then comes out and just doesn't show up against Syracuse and Leila Filia goes off, then I could see them winning against Michigan. I'm not too confident.
I think Kool-Aid has electrolytes in it, though, so maybe they will want to drink Kool-Aid. I'm kidding. I don't think it does have any
Maybe
electrolytes.
they'll leave Lobdell back with the women's team and he'll take the juicing station there and then.
I'm kind of on the Josh train a little bit. I like what I see, especially from Dominique Darius and Leila Filia, but I am a little cautious just because they haven't played anyone yet. They really have not played a real opponent yet. They've handled their opponents. There's no denying that. But this will be a step up in competition. I do think that Utah game is very winnable, and definitely something that could be achievable for Felicia Legette Jack's team, but we'll have to wait and find out. They start their run Friday a little bit earlier, Friday at 5, in Connecticut. So that should be fun with the Mohegan Sun. Am I right on that, Josh?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Interesting.
One more thing on this
Yeah,
women's
go ahead.
basketball team. You said they handled business. Wagner women's basketball, I think like D3 teams could have beaten them. Like
Yeah.
29
They handled
points.
business. They handled business.
Dude, they held them to 29 points, okay? I don't even think WAER could hold the Daily Orange to 29 points in the media.
Ooh. Whoa.
Oh, press record on that.
Dude. This was
Are
an
you?
unprecedented performance. I don't care who they're playing. This was the least amount of points Syracuse allowed in a game since 2014. I mean, they've played non-conference games in the past 10 years where they absolutely played worse teams than Wagner. And they
No.
still score. Oh, come on.
Wagner is probably a bottom five team in the country.
Well, I don't have KenPom rankings to disprove you there. I'm sorry, Griff.
I mean, it
Way
was
they.
just humiliating.
They took care of business. They took care of business in all three games. I think Canisius wasn't a great game. I mean, they didn't play well against Canisius at all. We
No.
talked about that, but I mean, they beat Wagner. I mean, what more do you want them to do, Griffin?
Yeah, Griffin.
I don't know. It's not about what more they could have done, is that you guys like you shouldn't be happy, like you shouldn't be using that game as like a stepping stool. Oh, they could potentially hold their own against Michigan because they held Wagner to 29 points. Like,
I mean,
okay, well.
well, I'll say this. I'll say this. Use the Utah game as a measuring stick.
Yeah.
Utah
Okay.
was in. Utah was in the tournament last year. They were an 8 seed in the tournament last year, and I think Syracuse should be favored against Utah because I think they're more talented. So if Utah, you know, if Utah drops lays an egg against Syracuse, and Syracuse moves to 5-0, I think they're going to hang around with Michigan. I think they could mess around and beat them.
Possibly. And
Yeah.
I do think they have the talent to beat Utah. There is talent on this team where last year I think there was a clear lacking in just talent and overall ability to put points up. Defensively, they're going to be good. I mean, that's all Coach Jack wants to talk about is how talented they are defensively.
If
And then,
Sophie Burrow shows
go
up,
ahead.
if Sophie Burrow shows up and starts knocking down threes, I think Syracuse can beat just about any team.
Including Michigan?
Sure.
God.
Sure. It could happen.
Burrow, unfortunately, has not gotten off to the best start in this young season, but there's still time for her to turn it around. I've also been a big fan of the freshmen on this team as well. I think there's talent. There is some stuff here that Coach Jack can work with, and she can coach teams to the tournament. She did that 2 seasons ago, where she had a I don't think it was a great team, but had a good team and did have yes one really good player in De'Asia Fair, but she still was able to coach them to the tournament. That's the basketball trends right now. It's exciting for the basketball. There's a lot of expectations. Again, with the men's, we kind of mentioned, took a hit. We got Eric Devendorf. That's who Griffin talked to right before the Monmouth game. A fantastic conversation with Eric. He's a fantastic guy to talk to in general, and just he knows everything about Syracuse men's basketball. We'll get to that in just a moment, but football's back. They had a bye week. I think that was good for everybody. Hopefully, it was good for this team. They're coming up against number 9, Notre Dame in South Bend. I think the line, what is the line for this game?
35 and a half.
35, yeah, and that could be reasonable.
Hey, it worked last game against Miami. They covered by the hook.
They did. I don't know how that went picks wise, but for me and Griffin, I think Griffin's got picks this year for football on me. But in terms of Notre Dame, I mean, oh boy, this. I mean, I've been worried about this game for 2 weeks in a row. I mean, this is not going to go well. It didn't help me when Fran Brown said we're going to roll with Filardi. I don't understand what his logic is there. I've almost taken a full 180 here on Coach Brown. I mean, I was believing in everything he said. I trusted him. I'm really starting to question his decision making, especially with the quarterbacks this year. I just don't understand what he saw from Filardi against UNC that he said, yeah, let's roll him out against in a road game against number 9 Notre Dame. I would much rather just roll with Ricky Collins again. I know Ricky Collins isn't good, but I trust Collins a little bit more than I do Filardi, and I know, there isn't a whole lot to see in Ricky Collins.
I completely agree with AJ. I don't know what Fran Brown is doing with the quarterback position. I'm a little bit lost. I think you want to save Luke Kearney and redshirt him. That's fine.
Yes, totally understand
Why Joseph Filardi? Like, are you not trying to win the game? Because I think Ricky Collins still gives you the best chance to win the game. I mean, even after that performance against Miami, I still think Ricky Collins is the best option. If you want to do a little something, Ja'Cory Williams is still on the roster, and that's been my guy for the past couple of years. He's still there. I think he's showing up to practice. Maybe he's not, and then that's why he's not playing. But I would assume he's showing up to practice. Rich Bielan, he's still showing up to practice as far as I'm concerned too. I was not impressed with what we saw from Filardi against North Carolina, and don't really understand why they're going back to Filardi. It just confuses me. I'm just confused. I'm puzzled. Hopefully Syracuse keeps all of its good recruits. Commitment, not commitment day. Signing day is coming up soon, so that's what I'm looking forward to. Seeing if there's any flips coming up. Because honestly, AJ, you said you've been stressed for 2 weeks about this game. I'm the li least bit stressed. Like, I couldn't care less about what
It's
happens
fear of an
on Saturday.
embarrassment.
Well, I
I just
mean,
fear that this team will get embarrassed.
they've already gotten embarrassed. Like, there's nothing left to be embarrassed more about. Right? I mean, there's
No,
nothing. It's the game just like season's over. Have fun. If you beat Notre Dame, cool. You'll knock another team out of the college football playoff. But that won't happen.
yeah, I think there's like two storylines here. The first one is Joe Filardi becomes the second coming of Kyle McCord in this one and knock out Notre Dame from the playoff. And the other scenario is Marcus Freeman earlier in the week said he's very excited to see Steve Angeli. So maybe he hugs Steve Angeli and heals him of his injury. And then Steve Angeli goes on a tear against his former team. No, I'm just kidding. There's absolutely no way that Syracuse wins the game. I mean, let's be real here. I think Fran needs, I don't think he deserves credit, but I think he needs a little more leniency here. I don't think people understand truly how hard it is to lose your starting quarterback. Now, was Ricky Collins suited to be the backup? No, not at all. I mean, what we're hearing from him just in general, like, this is not some stuff you want to be hearing about a guy who was going to be the starter until Angeli arrived on campus. But I do think this is an incredibly tough situation and one that Syracuse will hopefully never be in ever again because it has been an absolute crapshoot the entire season in the quarterback room since Angeli went down. And I think that'll continue here. I mean, Filardi did complete all three of his passes against Miami. So he does have that one thing going for him. If you start, I think he's the plan is to start him against Notre Dame. I know Fran just said he'll play the most, whatever that means. I just hope Ja'Cory Williams stays warm on the sideline. I'm really hoping to see him at some point over the last two games.
It'll be interesting. Yeah, I want to see him as well, and who knows what happens. I thought it was important to note that Steve Angeli, Yasin Willis, and Brian Washington all said that they are coming back next year, so that's key. Especially Yasin Willis. I was a little worried that he maybe dip into the transfer portal because he hasn't had a good season. I think he's underperformed, and I don't think it's all his fault. It hasn't been easy for anybody when you have a million different quarterbacks and just a tough schedule. So I hope he has a
Yeah, I mean,
bounce.
just look at the fact that Yasin thrived when Angeli was the quarterback, and then teams can sell out on the run when they have Ricky Collins throwing the ball against them. So it's just stuff like that where you're like, well, maybe this team isn't that bad. But go ahead.
No, yeah, you make a great point on that it was ultimately, a quarterback going down is what hindered his season. So hopefully, I'm hoping he gets a good game in him because he's due for one, and he does have all the talent to be a great player for this team and another great running back. Speaking of running backs, got to mention we all see Sean Tucker Sunday against Buffalo. He didn't get the win, but I could have picked him up in fantasy too. He was
Yeah.
sitting there, and I was like, oh, Sean Tucker, I could put him on my bench, and it was one of those where I was like, darn it. I could have had him.
Yeah, shout out to Sean Tucker, hashtag pleased.
Thank
Syracuse
please.
guys been yep. The guys from Cuse have been doing well this year. I know Gadsden was injured. OP's back on the field, but between him and Tucker, Syracuse pretty well represented in football, more so than in basketball, as we've talked about. I'm just kind of done with this team. I'm done. Usually this is how we were. This is how I was 2 years ago. Last year I was like, okay, you can be excited about a football team. And now I'm just like, oh, basketball's playing. And then the worst thing basketball could do is just play Monmouth close. And now I'm just like, ugh, is there any hope for anything anymore? And I was like, I don't know. Well, I don't know, Jim. We'll find out soon.
Syracuse will try to break its six-game losing streak. It's crazy to believe this team has not won since they upset Clemson, and the
Wow.
conversation was just completely different after that game.
September.
Yep, it has gone absolutely downhill. They have not played a close game since then. The closest game was SMU. That was 31-18, and that didn't feel like a close game at all.
Wow.
Since then, it's just been blowout after blowout after blowout. So that will be maybe the same story Saturday in South Bend. Kickoff is at 3:30. WAAR's coverage gets going at 3 p.m. and then double overtime immediately follows that one as well. And then you got basketball all Thanksgiving week to enjoy. The men's team has three games. We think that it'll be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Could be on Thanksgiving, so you can enjoy some basketball while you're eating your turkey. But that's all the time we got. It's time to send it over to Eric Diefendorf. Griffin sat down with Eric Diefendorf right before the Monmouth game. So again, keep that in mind when they're having their conversation. But they talked a lot about Vegas, a lot about the big picture things with Adrian Autry, and it's a great conversation. So you'll enjoy it, and that's where we'll send it now.
We now have the pleasure of being joined by Syracuse basketball alum, current ESPN analyst, and the founder of the ED23 Foundation, Eric Diefendorf. Eric, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us.
I appreciate you having me.
All right, so Syracuse, strong start to its basketball season, 3-0. What were some main takeaways from the first three games?
I think just obviously the defensive side of the ball, the defensive intensity, the versatility, the athleticism, being able to switch, pretty much one through five, honestly. Guards are doing a great job of putting pressure on the ball, making it tough for the opponents to make decisions. And then I think the forwards have been great down there, especially William Kyle, just flying around, blocking shots. Getting deflections. And defensively, they've really been locked in the first three games. And then offensively, I think they continue to get better. I think early on in the season, if you could have your defense be before your offense, you're in a pretty good spot. So offensively, they'll start to click. And you saw it in that second half versus Drexel. I think guys were able to get out and play with pace and get some good looks at the rim. And then obviously, like I said, their defense has been turned into offense on the other side of the ball. But these first three games, they did what they had to do, winning by 30 and 40 points. And now, they have Monmouth coming up tonight. It's tonight, 9 p.m. And then That's when they hit the road against those big time opponents in Houston, Kansas, and whoever the third one will be in Vegas. So so far, so good, but still a lot of work to do.
We are recording this on Tuesday. You mentioned the defensive intensity and then how that kind of relates into battling adversity against that Drexel game, exactly where I was going to go. It seems like a big emphasis this season has been on defense, and that necessarily wasn't the case last season and the year before. How do you think that the defense helped overcome the adversity against Drexel, and how important is it for a team to go through that early in the season and find a way to overcome it and not let it get to you?
Yeah, you want to be challenged. You want to have tests because, you know, getting deep into the season, you're going to have those games, especially in a conference play. So the earlier you could get familiar with those situations, the better. But, you know, second half defensively against Drexel, I think they allowed 14 points. You know, that's unheard of. You know, they were smothering, they were flying around, they're active, talking, communicating. And you know, like we said, they already have the athletes, 6'8", 6'7", you know, guys jumping around, flying around. So we haven't seen that. You know, the past few years at Syracuse. So now they have the players, and Coach Red is, and staff done a good job of getting the guys that they want for their vision and their plan going forward. And defensively, obviously, he's been talking about that the past few years. You know, they want to be defensively stout. You know, they want to set a standard. They want to have ball pressure. They want to be aggressive. They want to fly around. They want to have rim protection. Like you said, last year, they didn't have that. You know, they didn't have good ball pressure. And, you know, they're getting drove by. When they get drove by, they didn't have any rim protectors. So, you know, this year they're doing a good job of keeping guys in front. And then when they are able to get by, you know, you got two, three guys waiting there, you know, ready to swat your shot. So night and day from last year. But defensively, the second half, they were just intense. They first half getting out rebounded by 10. I think that's an effort thing, you know, just getting to the ball. They're already more athletic and bigger. Second half, they realized that and really got after it.
It kind of seems like this is a team where with the length and the shooting ability from a couple of these guys that Coach Boeheim would trot out with the zone. And it just, this team seems like it could be long and play the zone. But Syracuse obviously playing man-to-man. Switching up things up. I mean, not even the talk of the town or the city, but the whole country kind of seems like it's talking about Kyan, and rightfully so. I mean, he's been balling out 17 points per game. He leads the team in minutes. The thing that's been impressive to me is how college ready he's been, and the transition has been seamless. Are you surprised by that at all? And he looks like a legit composed scoring threat.
Yeah, I don't think I would say I'm surprised. I mean, you obviously look at his dad and who he's learned from and the pedigree that he has, Hall of Famer, one of the, you know, greatest of all time. So he's learned from one of the best ever, you know, and you could tell by his confidence, by his patience, by his composure. He's mature for a freshman. You know, he's head and shoulders above, you know, a regular freshman coming in and playing. You know, he's a guy who can make decisions. He could obviously score on all three levels. And I think defensively, he's putting in more effort than you would have thought of. So, he's a guy that he could come and score in bunches. I think with JJ coming back, that'll, you know, help him even more. The overall team play, just get another guy who could really score in bunches. He averaged 18 last year. But I think that JJ will come back and start just for, you know, team purposes and trying to keep everybody on the same page. And then Kyan, he could come in off the bench and play 25, 30 minutes, you know, and if it gets to the point where, you know, he gets in the starting lineup, I wouldn't be surprised at that either. But he's just a kid that's coming in super confident, can really score the basketball. He's creative. And he's getting better, you know, every game on the defensive side.
So you're not worried at all about how JJ is going to fit in with this team after it's gotten a bit in a groove. Obviously, JJ is a great player, but not too worried about how he'll fit in seamlessly.
No, I mean, just it's all about shot selection, right? Sharing the basketball. I mean, he's the guy you can insert in. He's another scorer. If I was a coach, I'd love to have another guy who could average 20 points or go off and score 30 points. You know, if one guy is not shooting the ball well, all right, we got another guy who could, you know, do the same thing. So, you know, Coach Red and staff, they're going to put him in there. They're going to make sure the situation and chemistry is together when, you know, when he's in the game and whoever else is in the game with him. But it's always great to have another scorer, a guy who could really, you know, come off and give you a 30 piece. So it's a good problem to have.
Maybe JJ can pull some of that Youngstown State performance from last year, personal performance, maybe not team performance, double overtime with Youngstown State, not good, but 37 points for him,
right?
38 points for him in that one. Pretty good. Another newcomer that has surprised me is William Kyle. Not by the tape, at least what you saw with him do at UCLA and previous stops, but he has just been really, really solid for Syracuse. Different player than Eddie Lampkin from last year, but I mean he's averaging a near double double, 10 blocks on the season, almost eclipsed Eddie Lampkin's mark from all of last season. What stands out to you about William Kyle?
I just think his activity. Obviously, he's a freak athlete, head and shoulders above the rim. He's blocking shots. He's directing from the center position. He's communicating, and he's rim running. I think that's what Syracuse needed. They needed a guy who could really protect the rim. Who could play above the rim as far as lob threats goes and offensive rebounding, and then a guy who could really run the floor, rim run. That helps in transition. If you could just go rim to rim, they have to. Defense eventually has to look at you if you get a couple of those outlets, and then that opens up everything else for your shooters when they collapse in on you. So he's just done a great job of being great in his role, playing defense, communicating, and then really cleaning up on the glass on both ends.
A type of player that Syracuse hasn't had in a couple of years, probably since Jesse Edwards. A little different player than Jesse, but similar where they're athletic and long
Right.
and can dunk the ball and block some shots. One of the obviously big factor into this season Syracuse's success is Donnie Freeman coming back, and he's looked like a star through three games. 17 points. What do you want to see from him that could put him over the top and put his name in draft contention?
I think just be aggressive, obviously be a monster on the boards. He only had two last game. So that's just, again, that's just an effort thing. He's a guy who could get double figure rebounds easily. Being aggressive around the rim, at the basket, mid-range area. He'll have those trail threes. He'll have those pick and pop threes. Those will be available. Just don't fall in love with it. I think if he's aggressive and uses his speed and athleticism to the rim, he'll be finishing, and then he'll also have opportunities at the foul line, which will open up his transition threes or pick and pop, whatever it may be. And defensively, I think he's definitely more than capable. Just getting block shots, flying around. You see early on, he's done a good job even guarding out in the perimeter and getting deflections, getting his hands on the ball, and a couple times got out in transition itself and got some dunks. So he's definitely a guy who's super talented. Just being aggressive, just staying locked in, and not settling. Don't fall in love with the jump shot. Don't settle. But if it's there, yeah, you're more than capable of knocking it down.
You've obviously had the transition between shooting in what you call a regular gym and shooting in the dome, which is a little different, the depth perception. Nate King's the lights out shooter last season has had a little bit of struggles coming into the dome this season and shooting the 3-point shot. What do you think he has to get, what do you think he has to do to get different looks? And is it just keep shooting, or is it trying to figure out different stuff for him to start knocking down some more threes?
Yeah, he just said he's a shooter here. He'll make shots. I think the biggest thing with him is he's not letting that affect his overall game. He's done a great job defensively, rebounding the basketball. He's been attacking, getting downhill, strong finishes at the rim. So, despite not shooting the ball well, he's still adding in other areas of the game, whether that be defense on the boards or getting to the basket and finishing. So he's a guy, like you said, he shot high mid-40s last year at Oregon State. He's going to make shots, and he'll get opportunities getting out in transition to float to the corner, to the wing, and then in half court when they execute, he'll get opportunities to get some catch and shoot looks, and he'll end up knocking them down.
Coach Autry and a couple of the players have mentioned the juicer station, where the guys at the end of the bench, maybe not playing as much, but still providing a lot to a team. Back when you were playing, what were those vibes like, and how important were the guys at the end of the bench that weren't necessarily getting minutes, but still impacting the team?
Oh, super important. You want the bench engaged. You want guys supporting, giving you energy, talking to you. That's what the whole team thing is. When you got 12 guys or whatever it is, 13, 14 guys, you want everybody engaged. I don't care if they play 30 minutes or they play 30 seconds. That's all that helps in towards the goal of winning a championship. So, back when I played, everybody was engaged. They were yelling, towel waving on the bench, and I think that team has this. Just from what I've been hearing, they're hanging together off the floor. They get along. They like each other, and that helps with the on the court play. So, yeah, I've seen it early on from them. They're engaged on the bench. They're yelling. They're supporting their teammates, and that's a great thing to have.
Looking ahead to the Players Era tournament in Vegas, you've played in your fair share of big games against big opponents in big arenas like MSG. How do you think this team is going to fare against its first real competition against Houston and Kansas next week?
I think defensively, if they stay playing how they are these first three games, they could play with anybody. I think just the intensity, the ball pressure and making it uncomfortable for these teams. If they could, be solid, keep guys in front, and then rim protect, and then rebound the basketball, not allowing second and third chance opportunities, they're going to be in the game. Houston, Kansas, obviously it's going to be a challenge defensively. They're going to make it tough on Syracuse. They're going to put ball pressure themselves. They're going to be physical. They're going to be on the glass. They're going to be contesting shots, especially Houston. But I think they have the players, Syracuse, to win the game and be in the game. So just executing offensively, because Houston and those teams, they're not going to turn the ball over as much as Drexel and Binghamton and Delaware State. They're going to do a good job of taking care of the ball, which means you're probably going to have less transition opportunities, right? So you're going to have to execute in the half court sets and get some clean shots, get some driving lanes to the basket, hopefully finishing and knocking them down, and then getting some opportunities at the free throw line. But if you are able to get turnovers and get out and play fast, you want to take advantage of that. Easier looks in transition. But defensively, if they could stay where they're at, they're going to give themselves a chance if they play like that. They've been playing incredible on the defensive side of the ball.
There's definitely a buzz around this team, unlike the past couple of seasons, whether it's Orkayan or leading the nation in scoring defense among fans in the community, there's definitely something going. Is there's that sort of energy around the alumni base where there are people that you have talked to close to the team that Syracuse fans are and Syracuse alumni, basketball alumni are really getting involved and really hearing more stuff about this team and really care about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all talk. We watch the games. We're, like you said, we're alum and we're passionate about the program and the university. And we definitely see something special. We talk about it, the athleticism, the versatility, how guys can move around, fast, quick. We got playmakers, you got shot makers, guys who block shots, defend. So you're covering a lot of areas. And then obviously seeing them these first three games, how they're playing defensively. They're giving themselves a chance every game. So it's definitely some excitement. It's good to see Syracuse back to being Syracuse. We're so used to success from this program, and look, every program goes through its ups and downs. So it's just good to see everybody get back on track and have fun playing out there and winning some games.
Thanksgiving's coming up. I know you are a bit make a big impact in the community with your ED23 Foundation. You want to just tell us a little bit about that and what you guys are doing the next couple of weeks to help out the community?
Yeah, so the ED23 Foundation, the mission is to help underprivileged youth here in the community of Syracuse. And a lot of times that goes with adults as well. But we're getting ready for our turkey drive, which will be this Saturday, November 22nd, from 12 to 2 at the Boys and Girls Club at Central Village, which is 212 Van Buren. This will be our 8th year doing it. First year, we started out, we handed out probably 75 turkeys in the back of the rescue mission. And now in our 8th year, we'll hand out 600, over 600 turkey dinners. So with the sides, all the fixings, and everything, just trying to help out the community. And we've been doing our fundraising and doing donation drop-offs for the last, couple of months, just involving the community and getting people to drop off their non-perishable goods. And if they want to choose to donate monetarily, that's fine as well. You can go on the website, ed23foundation.org. We have a donate tab at the bottom. But people have been more than generous. They've been supporting, every single year. Like I said, we're in our 8th year, and we're just trying to make an impact and help out as many people as we can in the community, and also connect people to be able to do the same thing that we're doing and help more people. That's the whole idea of it.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate you joining us and all your work with the community. Look forward to seeing you on the call for a couple more games, the rest of the season. And thank you.
I appreciate you having me.
Big thank you to Eric Diefendorf once again, and great conversation Griffin had with him. He's great insight on everything Syracuse men's basketball. He really does know the program and the team in and out. That's all the time we got for you here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. It was a great episode. We talked about just about everything with this men's team, got dipped into some women's basketball and talked football. And that's where your coverage is going to be Saturday. It starts at 3 p.m. with McClurg Remodeling. Countdown to kickoff, and then the double overtime goes all the way to 8:30. Syracuse takes on number 9 Notre Dame from South Bend. And then, as I mentioned, you got football, you got basketball rather, starting up the right after that, the week after, on Monday and Tuesday in Las Vegas. WAR will have complete coverage of that as well. Be sure to listen to previous episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast wherever you get your pod or at WAR.org. Until then, we will see you sometime after Thanksgiving to recap everything this basketball team did. Hopefully it's a successful trip to Vegas. If not, we'll be here no matter what, breaking it down. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.